The 24th Problem by Janiah Riley. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. Chapter 14. The Beast That Shouted at the Heart of the World.
2219. Common Earth Era. Midtown Corporate Residence Center. New York Metropolitan Administration Sector.
Roxy's current home was little more than a closet in a corporate high-rise in the middle of Manhattan Island's Midtown. A short hallway that contained a tiny bathroom and recessed galley kitchen, really just an Instaheat and a mini-fridge, and then a room that was kind of combination bedroom and living room, mostly taken up by a bed. It technically folded into the wall, but Roxy never bothered. They shut the door behind them and was down the hall and into the combination bed and living room, bed-living room, in a few short steps. They flopped down onto the surprisingly comfortable bed without even bothering to take off their shoes. At least the corporate contract they were on right now, the one that provided them with this housing until the contract was up, offered a small window set on the side of the building. The view was good, except when the smog got too bad and then it wasn't. Right now the sun was starting to go down and the pollution in the air was lighting up all kinds of orange and red and yellow, and it was, in its own fucked up way, kind of beautiful. Roxy murmured into the pillow they had planted their face on. A nice enough place to go for now. The corporate contract was good for another 6 months, and the corpo shits might even have extension work for them. Pay was subgrade for their skill set, but it came with housing in a decent part of the city, and it was pretty easy, which gave them time to do other things, like passing on incredibly shady jobs to their ex-girlfriend. Roxy's face twisted against the pillow. They wanted to talk about this to someone, but the field was a little bit narrow at the moment, especially given the subject matter. There was one option, at least. Roxy sat up and grabbed the portable workstation they used for basically everything. Less refined looking than the latest and greatest vid screens, but considerably more powerful under the hood. It was also something they owned outright. Even if they got kicked out of corpo housing, they'd always have a way to make money. Not always by legit means, maybe, but there was always work to be had. A few taps on the screen and a few seconds of listening to the video messenger chime, and Dirk Strider's face appeared on the screen. He was, as always, wearing the same stupid fucking tactical shades he never took off.
Roxy, what time is it?
They rolled their eyes.
Dude, it's like 5 PM. You're only an hour behind me.
Out in the middle of the ocean, working one of the orbital launch platforms that kept Earth connected to her smaller but also much hotter sister Luna, plenty of work to be had on the lunar colony if you were willing to accept a certain level of insane risk. Plenty more work getting people and materials up there and back.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm on a super fucked shift rotation. It's like my 3 AM.
So was he sleeping in the shades too? He probably totally was.
What's going on?
You got a sec for me to brain dump on you.
They rolled over on their side and looked up at the terminal screen, where Dirk was in the process of rubbing his chin and yawning.
Sure. Unburden yourself, my child.
Dude, I'm like 5 hours older than you. That's a lot of fucking hours.
They couldn't see it because of his stupid shades, but they got the sense that Dirk was rolling his eyes at them.
Right. A veritable eternity. What's on your mind?
I don't know, it's kind of sensitive.
Guess I can tell you in vague terms.
Work shit?
He asked, his voice perking up a little bit. Let no one try to claim that Dirk Strider wasn't a giant fucking gossip.
Confidential?
Nah, man. Not work stuff. Not exactly. More of a side thing.
They found themselves yawning reflexively, tired from a day of walking around and keeping secrets.
You talked to Jane lately, BT Dub?
No.
There was something in Dirk's expression. This was a sore subject.
You know that. Look, I know she's your ex, and you're probably still not over her.
Hey!
It wasn't all the way true. Deserved to be responded to, even if it wasn't, strictly speaking, a denial.
Sure, whatever. Well, I stopped talking to her around the time she decided to join up with fucking Metpol.
Something burned up in Roxy's chest. A paradoxical urge to defend her ex. But hadn't they been the most vocal opponent of what Jane did? Dirk, that was 5 years ago. She joined when she was 21 and
she stayed with them for 10 years. Until she finally pulled the short straw and had to leave. Not like she had a crisis of conscience or anything, you're just saying this stuff because you still want to fuck her.
Roxy's face burned bright red. They didn't think Dirk could see it over the low-quality vid feed, but you never knew. That's not true. Mumbling worthless words, who was he to talk? Who were any of them? Working for the corporations that basically owned the police anyway? Everyone was a link in the same horrible chain. Either you were part of the system, or you exploited people who were part of the system, or you exploited the people exploited by the system. A never-ending carousel of human misery, all the way down to the grave. And then, the protein recycler. And the promise that your family would get 10% of whatever they sold your component parts for, scrap in the end.
Sure. So what was it you wanted to tell me about? Not your conflicting feelings for Jane Cracker, I assume?
A lot of judgment in there, but it was easy enough to ignore on top of everything. Yeah, I passed her a job. Something eyes only. Something big.
Nope.
Roxy squinted at the screen. What do you mean, nope?
I mean, I'm not doing this. I don't know everything about the fucked up world of corporate bullshit that y'all inhabit on the daily. But I do know what eyes only means in this context. And I know that I don't want some LP dude running me down because you said something you weren't supposed to.
It's not a corpo job. Low voice, conspiratorial now. Dirk laughed on the other end of the feed.
That's fucking worse. I'm morbidly curious. Some favor for an old buddy at Metpol or something worse? Some military gig.
You know MilSec isn't allowed to operate in corp land without emergency declarations from the major players. This was a nothing rebuttal. MilSec was basically allowed to do whatever the fuck they wanted within their means. Only their dependency on the corporations kept things relatively peaceful most of the time. A pause. They could tell that Dirk was intrigued, but he had at least some sense of self-preservation buried somewhere in that spiky-haired head of his, and he didn't like Jane much, but still, they knew the look he had. They'd been friends a long time. Dirk sighed and threw up a hand.
Fine. Tell me this short won't get me killed by a corporal hit squad version.
I got this job slid my way, like, physically outside my door with a fucking note on it. Said to bring it physically to Jane, but...
You put it on your phone and took a look.
It's a secure system. Besides, I stand to PraxSec for info brokers. In case something's compromised or whatever.
You're not an info broker, and Jane isn't your client. She's your friend.
Why did that sting so much? Dirk was the one who didn't even like her much.
So what happened next?
The job is a missing persons thing, nothing too weird. Probably some rich kids ran away from home.
So it's a kidnap job for some corporal exec? Cool stuff, Rox. You're really moving up in the world here.
Too much judgment behind that, but they ignored it. No, it's a missing persons case. Which means the Metpol won't touch it and LP doesn't give two flat shits. Besides, that's not the weird part.
Nothing to that but interested silence, so they kept on.
The location that was given as their last known... I maybe took a look. It was in the middle of a big fucking chunk of outside up the river a ways.
Well, I'm officially no longer interested. You sent our friend up the river to do something impossible.
It didn't escape Roxy's notice that he still called Jane a friend after everything.
At least she's got some sense in her. She'll figure it's impossible and call it. Whoever those poor fucks are, they're dead now. Insights turned out are infected with something that turns them into alien mushrooms or some shit.
He shrugged into the view screen.
No difference to me one way or the other. But tell Jane to watch her ass. I'm going back to sleep.
Okay, fine. Love you, asshole.
Love you, shithead.
And the vidscreen went dark. Back to the custom UI that Roxy had set up for the chat client. They sighed and huffed, blowing a stray strand of hair off to the side.
Helpful as always.
But he had made them feel a little bit better. He was right about the job. Probably just some rich dumbasses who decided to do a little urbex in the outside. They were far from the first ones to do it, and the survival rate was highly variable. The small bits and pieces around town were maybe okay if you were careful and didn't go in too far, the kind of expanse that was marked out on the map. That was just suicide. Before she could finish the train of thought, Roxy felt her stomach gurgle again.
Dude, we just had this conversation.
They backed off the bed and stood up, grabbing their phone and locking their terminal down. There was a corpo caft on the street that gave them a temp employee discount. It was still humid in Midtown, but at least here the brackish water from the Seaport District was nowhere to be found. Far enough north of the Divide that things seemed almost normal most of the time. Well, except for the fact that they were walking through a corporate hellscape teeming with loss prevention and MetPol, who were dedicated to keeping the city's massive homeless population completely out of sight. Fortunately, the gig they were working in right now came with a few perks, including a corporate pass card that gave her ID-linked access to most of Midtown. Of course, they could just spoof the thing, but this was the genuine article. It would hold up to any amount of scrutiny short of being burned by the corpo shits they were working for. Given that they were just a mid-tier interface developer on this project, that was unlikely to happen, even if management were to suddenly change. With the sun down below the buildings now, everything was lit up with an artificial glow that almost rivaled the daylight for intensity. Multicolored ads and signage everywhere, the various markers of modern society on full display. They didn't mind it so much most of the time, it became surprisingly easy to tune it all out. Especially when they were used to staring at screens most of the day. They didn't even notice the person who slid up next to them. A combination of distraction and the quiet approach of someone used to snatch and grab. Ma'am, you need to come with us. That was a cold voice. Roxy didn't like that. They turned their head to see who was there. A man dressed in the kind of badly fitting cheap suit that MetPol detectives favored. Another man a little way back in a similar outfit.
Ain't a ma'am, dude.
Why the fuck did I say that?
But the man in the suit didn't really seem to care one way or the other. Roxy Lalonde, you're coming with us one way or another. No matter how you want to do it. They really didn't like how calm this guy's voice was. That was way scarier than the kind of thugs who yelled and screamed. In spite of the off-the-rack suit, Roxy got weird vibes off him. Same kind of vibes they'd gotten off a Fed the one time they'd met one.
Okay, dude. You don't gotta ask me twice.
That was enough, they supposed. The man nodded to his partner, who pulled out a key fob and clicked it. From above, Roxy heard the sound of a Verticar's thrusters kicking in. A sleek, black car that had all of its branding removed. More Fed vibes. Corpos wouldn't like that. The prohibition on the Feds was more of a norm than the formal treaty that kept Milsec out, but still. The Verticar landed next to them, and the back door slid open. The man standing next to them gave their back a little shove. Get in, Lalonde.
Yeah, Jesus shit, man.
They stepped into the back of the Verticar and the door was closed and locked after them. The man and his partner slid into the front seats, separated from the back by a divider that looked bulletproof. The car lurched up and began a smooth ascent into the skyway between the buildings. From the front, they could hear the man who'd threatened them speaking into a secure comm rig.
Package retrieved. Inbound in 10.
No audible response, but the man nodded as if he'd heard something. Earpieces then. Roxy reached into their pocket and pulled out their phone. They could probably...
It's a secure line. We've read your file, Alan. Just sit back and enjoy the ride.
So am I, like, under arrest?
Roxy asked, trying very hard to keep the tremble out of their voice. The man in front laughed.
Alan, if you were under arrest, you would have been hauled away in a locker. Think of yourself as a provisional guest.
He doesn't know anymore. He's just bullshitting at this point.
Roxy nodded without saying any more and turned to look out the window. They had only been in a Verticar a few times. Taking a cab was so fucking expensive and the train was included with her gig bennies. From the air, the lights of the city were enchanting, like something seen in miniature. The Verticars didn't fly that far up, but the higher lane still cleared all but the tallest of the city's buildings. But rather than just gawking at the sights, Roxy was trying to figure out where these two assholes were taking them. The car had turned north at first, and Roxy figured they were taking them to some corpo exec residence up by Central Park, but then the car went south and onto one of the skyways that led toward the end of the island. That was confusing. The only stuff down there were the Seaport District slums and the Seawell facilities.
And the Black Tower.
Roxy felt their skin start crawling. There was one skyscraper that was still actively maintained down in that district, a massive, black-walled building that bore no corporate logos of any kind. It had at one point been some kind of city administrative building or corporate tower. Roxy wasn't sure which, but it had been purchased by an unknown buyer 50 years back. Like any programmer of hackerly inclinations, Roxy had tried their luck at finding out more information, but the obfuscation around the building was thorough. On the ground, the approach was protected by security personnel armed with military weapons and wearing no identifiable logos. The skyways around the building were completely restricted. Roxy remembered that a wandering Verticar had entered the airspace a few years ago and been promptly shot down. It was reported as an engine failure and crash, but Jane had seen it happen. And the way she described it sounded like a MilSec-issue railgun to Roxy. The working theory was that it was some kind of PAGCR black site that was allowed to operate around the corporate jurisdiction of the NY Metro. Some kind of long-term backroom deal, most likely. The feds might not be best friends with the corpo shits, but they still had some level of pull. It had become such a fixture in the city that no one really talked about it anymore. Whether it was something the feds ran or something else didn't really matter. No one ever went in or out, and it was unapproachable. Not worth thinking about. Sure enough, the tower loomed up in the distance, blotting out the surrounding city lights. They never kept it lit up either. Weird as hell all around. Roxy could feel their pulse, starting to race.
Man, if they wanted you dead, you'd already be dead.
Despite the cold logic of the thought, it wasn't helping much. There were worse states of being than dead.
We're inbound in one,
the man said into the secure comm again. Another response Roxy couldn't hear.
Understood.
He turned to his partner and pointed.
Use Bay 15.
The Verticar pitched up and accelerated, drawing closer and closer to the tower in the distance. Roxy swallowed hard. If they wanted them dead, they would be dead already. Closer and closer. All the night blotted out by something even darker. And then the dark swallowed them up. The Verticar moved inside the massive superstructure. Roxy had never appreciated just how big the tower was. A door in front of them slid open and a light flooded out, revealing a Verticar dock beyond. The car moved forward again, smoothly dropping down and landing on the deck below. The back door lock clicked open.
Here's where you get out,
the man said.
So, are you guys gonna, wait for me here?
No response to that. Roxy looked back and forth between the two men.
So?
Get out,
the partner said. First time he bothered to speak. Roxy was quick enough on the uptake to understand a threat when they heard one, so they pushed the door open and stepped out onto the deck. Behind them, the Verticar was already taking off again. Not a good sign, generally speaking. The dock itself was fully enclosed, and once the door closed behind the departing Verticar, it might as well be any other garage. It was well lit, illuminating the flat gray of the permasteel interior. Not quite as ominous as they were expecting.
Roxy Lalonde, welcome.
A clear, slightly rough voice coming from the far end of the hangar. Someone walking towards them, wearing a suit that looked a lot more expensive than the two maybe cops that had just dropped Roxy off.
I'm sorry to do this, but this is extremely important.
The person crossed the room, and Roxy finally got a good look at them. Skin that was way too pale, and
ears?
It looked like a pair of fox wolf ears. Half covered by their hair, Roxy's eyes grew wide.
You're an outsider.
Inside the near-mythical Black Tower, talking to someone that, by all accounts, shouldn't exist.
Ridiculous. You know as well as anyone that all the outsiders died 100 years ago.
They sounded almost amused.
I simply like wearing these ears to work. Bullshit!
Roxy blurted out before they could stop themselves. Among the many strange things linked to the outside, the outsiders themselves were the most tragic. Prone to strange diseases and unable to survive for very long outside of very specific, impossible to maintain conditions, usually half-crazed from something they would never have the linguistic abilities or cognitive faculties to describe. And then they'd all died out in the span of a few years. That was the legend, told over and over in corpo school history classes, a tragic consequence of failing to respect the outside for what it was. This person smiled at Roxy, a smile with two sharp teeth.
What does it matter? You're going to follow me? Because it's important.
They turned and began to walk, and Roxy rushed over to catch up to them. From the back, they could see a fluffy tail sticking out from a hole in their dress pants. So either unusually committed to an extremely strange bit, or...
My name is Ruby, by the way.
The person might as well call it what it probably was and think of them as the outsider, half-turned to introduce themselves to Roxy.
It's rude not to say your name, when you know so much about the other party, I think.
You're so...
Roxy wasn't sure how to put it in a way that wouldn't sound incredibly rude.
I heard stories about outsiders in school.
I'm sure. Don't worry. I don't eat babies.
Roxy felt their face get hot.
Not what I heard. Just that most of you couldn't talk or anything.
A shrug, a flick of their tail.
I wouldn't know. I'm 20. The history you're talking about happened long before I was made.
Roxy nodded as if any of this made sense.
Right. Very cool stuff. So, where are we going?
They'd arrived at an inner door, and Ruby stopped to open it, pressing their wrist up against the side until a light turned green. Implanted biosec device, nothing unheard of, but still fancy stuff. The door opened, and they stepped forward into a hallway that ran in two directions. The whole thing was upper-class corporal all the way down. Dark paneling that looked like real wood, and recessed lighting that was supposed to make everything look classy but mostly just made things dark. The floor was some kind of polished tile. Roxy's boots clicked on it as they walked.
I was asked to bring you here, and specifically told not to tell you the answer to those kinds of questions. Ask me something else, something less important.
Roxy thought for a second, then snapped their fingers.
Oh yeah, you like games or anything?
Games, like vidscreen games or...
Sure,
Roxy chimed. That got Ruby to smile.
Yes, I have a lot of free time here. And access to basically whatever I want, so...
An outsider corporal, Brad? Is that what we're doing here?
Nah, hot shit.
I'm sorry, what?
Roxy grinned and waved a hand.
You know, like, that's the hottest shit. It means I think that's really good.
Right. I knew that.
Ruby finished, their voice dropping.
I don't go out much, never.
Yeah, I guess the ears and tail.
Ruby looked, for the first time since Roxy had seen them walk into the Verticar dock, nervous.
Yeah, look. I'm not supposed to be talking to you that much, just supposed to send you in to talk to them, and then I can go back to watching the video I was in the middle of. Sorry.
They did actually sound sorry. Their whole manner was like someone who was raised to be polite but had no actual contact with other people. Another door similar to the first. Ruby stopped and tapped their wrist against the side of it, and another green light appeared, letting them both know the door was open.
Here you go. I'm not supposed to come in, sorry.
Dude, what happens after I talk to this mystery person? Persons, people?
Roxy could feel their heart starting to race a little bit. More worry about the immediate future.
Like, not gonna lie, I don't really want to end the night dropped down the recycler in your incredibly spooky tower.
Ruby looked almost offended at the comment.
They're not gonna kill you. They did actually mention that specifically, but I don't know what happens after. Maybe they'll ask you to stay.
Ruby's ears twitched at that, and Roxy could hear the lonely in their voice, the isolation of years. Ruby opened the door, and Roxy stepped through. This room was wholly different from the hallway before it. Rather than the dim but pleasant aesthetic of the corporate wood paneling, this room was cavernous and lined in some kind of flat black material. making it difficult to figure out where it started and ended. When the door closed, Roxy turned back to see it was also covered in the same material, making it almost impossible to see the seam of the door itself. In front of them, there were 8 pillars, or monoliths, arranged in a semicircle, raised up slightly. Half of them were made of a deep black stone, and the other half of a bright white stone. Roxy didn't know enough about geology to place the materials, but it reminded them of a classy corporate monument. The pillars, monoliths, alternated black and white, starting with one of the black monoliths and ending with a white one. The outermost 4, 2 on each side, felt strangely dead. And there was a kind of hum emanating from the central 4 that wasn't present in the others. Roxy took a step forward into the room.
"Okay, this is weird as fuck."
Their voice should have echoed in such a large space, but it didn't. Maybe the walls were sound-treated? One of the monoliths glowed slightly. The black one closest to the center, emitting a faint purple glow that could have been some kind of hidden light. But that didn't feel like the right answer. The same way that Ruby didn't feel like someone wearing a costume.
"You needn't fear consequences of talking to them. In 97% of the cycles you talk to Ruby, 81% of the time you recognize them correctly as the type of being you refer to as an outsider. 72% of the time you ask them about vidscreen gaming."
"Predictable."
The pillar to the left of the first speaker lit up, faint gold against the white stone.
"Expected outcomes. We do not need to discuss this every time."
The first voice responded.
"In 98% of the cycles, they ask whether it was okay that they spoke with Ruby. I wish to eliminate redundancy, nothing more." "Very well."
The second voice fell silent, satisfied.
So...
Roxy stared up at the monolith. Some kind of bizarre conference system. Why do all this if not to make them afraid? "Who are you?"
"In 79% of cases, that was their initial question."
A deeper voice from the leftmost pillar that Roxy thought of as active. There was an almost mocking quality to it.
"I'm aware."
The first voice again.
"I am going to circumvent some of the rigmarole on this cycle, if that is quite all right. It was fine the last 736 cycles. Why not this one?"
The white pillar directly to the right of the first speaker this time.
"Unless you want to propose some new twist on the proof."
Back and forth, Roxy looked from monolith to monolith, wondering why anyone would go through all the trouble of doing this. Vidscreens would be cheaper and easier.
"I had one idea, actually."
The first speaker again. The cold in their voice felt so distant. There was a bright flash of light in front of them. No, that wasn't right. There was a flash of darkness. Everything went black for a fraction of a second, and then there was someone standing in front of them, a woman wearing dark purple, verging on pitch black robes. A woman of utterly striking beauty, her face devoid of any emotion, save for a kind of detachment that spoke not of years, but eons. "In 95% of cycles, this is when you scream." And Roxy did.
For the text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Janaya Riley. The music is Cycles, composed and produced by Sam Gabriel. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can also find other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.